House Judiciary Committee meeting, March 16th, 1978.
Well, the Renewable Resource Fund is the same thing, except it's 5% of all oil revenue go into the Renewable Resource Fund.
Okay. And HDR 31,
section 64 on the Renewable
Resource Fund. HDR 31.
First one, have the assumption that the permanent fund bill. Permanent fund bill can cap out finance committee. So, you know, I didn't realize, I thought this was done in the finance committee too, but it got referred to us. But the for instance, if we didn't set up any structure, then obviously this has no effect. This merely gives power to the legislature to confirm. Yeah, well, like the governor, I think, introduced one of his own, or has set last year to do that. Renewable Resource Development Fund and the Renewable Resource Permanent Fund.
minutes. You can't spend. So we fiddled around with that language. There is an opinion from the Attorney General of the Secretary. And there was an opinion on the tax in 3 and the point of the Attorney General of the But the Legal Resource Fund doesn't take money from government taxes. Okay, well, and it also has to be subject to appropriation by the legislature. So it's different from permanent. No money can be spent out of Legal Resource Fund without the appropriation process. So they therefore insisted that in the House proposal, we were going to set up a very clear what we should do in terms of appropriation.
I think I'm weapon. May I also make a suggestion? If you are going to go this next shall involve the carrying a weapon for personal protection. I suggest that you change it from a defense to an affirmative defense. I think you should put the burden on the defendant to establish that, instead of having the burden on the prosecution to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the person did not carry it for personal protection. The reason I'm saying this is because if we go with this amendment, we probably will have the most expanded defense for the CCW of any state that I'm aware of. Okay, but what about the kind of having a affirmative defense?
I think that the situation now is that the cops are not only arresting people, innocent people, who feel arrested, but people feel that they don't really have the right to kill them because of the law. Yeah, but I mean, the situation not arresting transportation system is so much better. But those people want to feel that the right themselves are not violating the law. So what we're trying to do is make them legal, but at the same time, not make it hard to prosecute criminals for people.
They aren't enjoying it. Thank you. is it because it wasn't carried through, there was more convenient for him to have it over the thousands, or the archaeologist has got a handful of samples, something like that, then the jury can buy the argument. I think walking across 4th Avenue, before it rolls too much of the meat in Anchorage, somebody who was 6'4" and built like Rosen's rear, arguing that he had a necessarily was carrying on that outdoor activity, necessarily involved in carrying a weapon for personal protection, the jury would laugh him out of court.
I think it's also the intention here is that when he argued the word activity, we were referring to something other than the ability to work or walking around with the 4th Avenue. And the problem is, you leave sporting in, you leave out, for example, the kid in terms of a geologist or whatever.
Let me just make a comment to the record, because I've spent 15 years in the day old Mandela and going to the presidential health matter, so and the city was trying to keep the public from not being there. It was an awesome public and they don't care for them. They're not on the growing age, but I don't know whether they are or aren't. It's illegal.
First of all, in the prosecution under the section, in many of the cases, the only thing that's being prosecuted was the bearing of a concealed weapon, not a violent act or the use of the weapon. So that's what we're talking about. And secondly, here again, we've got the situation where the chairman opposed the amendment is affirmative defense. That is, that the defendant in the prosecution for CCW has to come forward with the evidence and prove to the jury beyond it, you know, prove to the jury by preponderance of the evidence that they were involved in a lawful outdoor activity that necessarily involved the carrying of a weapon for personal protection. Now, how many juries are going to buy some of the arguments where it was the improper action or the unreasonable nature of a way of carrying a gun? In almost all cases, it's going to be interpreted to apply only to the rural area, and even then, when it really seems to be necessary, to make it a jury question, and you're going to have an Alaska jury. Understand the concerns you've got about everybody having a gun, but also understand the Alaskan experience. But we're not arming anybody. We're already armed. I don't know anybody who goes out in the bush for more than 1 or 2 days and has to have some kind of arm with them, and usually because of the circumstances, they carry a concealed weapon, you can carry it that way. Yeah, well, that's what I'm talking about. Lawful, outdoor activity.
And I think that's what
that necessarily involves the carrying of a weapon for personal protection. That is, you've got three elements that have to be proved to the jury by a preponderance of the evidence. That the activity was lawful, that it necessarily involved the carrying of the weapon, and that it was an outdoor activity. Otherwise, the jury won't buy the defense, and you're guilty of CCW.
Okay, are you trying to
unlawful entry, fishing, trapping, or other lawful outdoor activity that necessarily involves the carrying of a weapon or person.
My second reading is object
Props, we have dwellings.
We did,
but the problem was that when it was authorized, that every that was the problem with every bar owner could carry a concealed weapon.
In an earlier draft, we said they could.
Oh, right, and then you decided not, then you decided to change that.
Oh, I sure did.
Well, you weren't here then.
Well, very well, you didn't.
Good dealer.
Good
dealer.
Oh, no, the only thing we said was you could have, you couldn't carry around a concealed weapon on it, but you could have one behind your bar.
Right, I mean,
yeah.
Right, well, then it's not concealed. Under those situations.
That was the whole point, right? The employee is not going to be guilty of the
discrimination. It has to be with arms
behind the bar, but we didn't say people could arm themselves.
What happened to the original way in which the bill was written? It said that was all right. I thought that was fine, right?
So what?
I know specifically that we there was a motion to continue the on the premises.
Second thought, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, and then bouncers came through. See, we have a
the whole point is, and the only reason you can cover bars anyway is that people have guns behind bars. So we then cover them because that's what's happening anyway. We couldn't once we start on the bars.
There may also be confusion since that bar problem is specifically addressed on line 6-8 in terms of possessing a bar. The failure to do that, you simply can't carry the table. I mean, and that I don't get any. If the original proposal did allow that, that would have a lot of testimony with that. And there was a specific vote on that. I would call it.
I'm very concerned that you are saying that the there is no reason why. I just don't get any reason why a person like in the grocery store or in the bar should carry concealed weapon. We're saying you know the only time we say you can't possess it in the store is when it's in the bar, and then we say you can possess it. We have a specific defense to that.
We allow possessing by property owners. It would say he can't carry concealed.
I assume in any way you want to conceal a weapon in the store, I don't think you want to make
that. What if I use my gun strategy to come on for a certain purpose, and because I, like, it's a carnival or something, I'm on my property, and I'm walking out of concealed weapon.
The thing that bothers me about Mr. Carpenter's amendment is that on his property can also mean that if somebody owns 900 apartment houses or something like that, and you can carry a concealed weapon in one of them. But the language of it as it's written now, I think, is too limited. I would think that if it's property of persons who are relating to his own dwelling, and, you know, as it's written right now, if you're inside your own house, it's legal to take one step outside your house and stand on the porch, you're still going to be sexually guilty of carrying a concealed weapon. And on his property, I think it was who got, somebody who had all kinds of property for business or other purposes, not his own dwelling place, or something like that.
Well, if you don't, that's not very cool. But it exists, you know, you take time for another way, they have it. But the only thing I'm getting to do is the fact that I don't like the government, don't guide us, you know, don't talk.
Oh, look, no.
I realize it's a really, you know, it's a law of outdoor activities in the yard.
But I think Fred's amendment, I mean, Fred's suggested change your amendment. I think it's a very expand the right, and says you can do it on the land that's outside your house.
Which is said that it is dwelling on the property surface.
Yeah.
You're beautiful.
That's bad.
I'm trying to get to...
Well, you're starting to sound like a lawyer there. Well, I'm not certain I'm satisfied with that world.
Oh yeah, Manly Hot Springs.
There's a way of reaching out and have to dig them all out.
Okay, Larry, is that your close amendment?
Or from the application?
When it comes back after it's been all glued together, I'd like to see
if it's true.
If you
read the
whole thing,
can you read the whole thing?
Yes. In a prosecution under A1 or A2 of the statute, it is an affirmative defense that the defendant at the time of the statute is in its dwelling or on property pertinent to the dwelling or is engaged in lawful hunting, fishing, trapping, or other lawful outdoor sporting activity. Outdoor activity that necessarily involves the carrying of a weapon for personal protection. That will be broken down.
That will be carrying to change to a person to the dwelling, a person to his dwelling.
Is there any objection to the amendment?
No objection to the amendment.
Terry, one other thing on weapons. It's just a quick one. On page 76.
The damn next cop is going to do anything about it.
You write a story telling all the gun freaks and protecting them. Don't put
smoke in the gun.
Take that read out.
Well, I'll tell you the gun legislation in this state will be so complex for you.
For me, that's fine. That's how I make my money.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's something to play with when you're close.
Should I go get my sword?
That's how we got most of the amendments.
This one is written so well, we can just put it up or down on the road. Thank you.
signed by Al Gross and Hickey and Carpenter. It's pretty similar.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I was on record. Okay. I had a discussion with Mr. Stern earlier, and I'm not sure of the exact parliamentary procedure on it, so I think perhaps we ought to make it clear on the record what we're doing. He took the draft that the committee gave him about a week or 10 days ago. Mr. Stern then proceeded to do a cleanup of that language cleanup. Then we, which resulted in another draft that the committee denounced him. Then we took it to the little ad hoc committee of myself, Mr. Stern, Mr. Gardner, the Attorney General, and Dan Hickey, and Mike Livingston. And we went through it, came up with some more technical changes, and then took what we considered the technical recommendations from the Department of Law and plug them in, and that is the draft we have before you.
I have two things here. What should we
do? We have a draft, and then we should have an amendment.
The draft is the one that starts out.
Section 1, yeah, Declaration of Independence. Okay, now, as far as I'm concerned, the draft has only two substantive changes in it that the committee, I believe, should sign off on before there's a markup vehicle on it. In other words, I'm concerned about the fact that the committee didn't sign off on it. You know, keep it down the road sometime or some different question to the validity of the amendment. And that would be in on page 11 of the bill. Beginning on line 18, where it says a prior felony conviction. Then you go down to line 20, in the bill that the committee signed off on about 10 days ago, instead of less serious class of offense, the language only said less serious class. And I'm not sure whether that's a substantive change or not. I can't give you the reason why it should be, but I'll give you the reason why I'm concerned, because Amendment number 2, the First Amendment, is talk about the classification of defense and that's a substantial change. What in the ad hoc committee we got into this problem of how do you define what a class of defense was when it was not classified by the law from another state. In other words, what the total dangers are. So instead of sticking with class, we decided to go class defense, and then with amendment number 2, we define what an eighth element is in a common law.
To avoid litigation. Mr. Chairman, I don't think that stuff is a change. I wouldn't anticipate an amendment we have passed yet, but class of defense, I think that's all right. Does anybody have any problems with that change in case 11 to 20? We'll get to that in a minute.
Mr. Chairman, I just realized that this draft is open for issue. Okay. In fact, I don't know how this happened. We're going to go off the record because we've got a serious problem in this.
Off the record?
Your draft is missing about a page and a half.
I'm going to go get
it. Sorry, you have a page and a
half. Okay. Go back in the record. Perfect.
That was only meeting.
Okay.
So, as long as that's on the record and as long as the committee knows about it, Mr. Chairman, then I think we're covered as far as any possible problems that may arise in the future.
Well, we did agree with that. That is
I
asked and nobody objected to that.
Okay.
So I
So should I just go right into the amendment?
Yeah, why don't we go to amendment number 2?
Okay. Amendment 1, I just discarded because I blended into amendment 2. If you recall,
I got one here.
Well, now, let me explain what this letter does. I went through the letter and I went, for each suggestion I put down, whether I incorporate it into amendments, whether I incorporate it into technical markup, or whether I discard it. So it just says technical no, amendment number 4, technical no. That's the
no means
that I asked the chairman, and the chairman said unless the committee decided to bring it up that we would not consider it.
I'm going to give you a three categories. First, we got technical, we put those to them. It didn't change the substance. The second category was amendments that looked like things that we either had in covered or maybe probably feel that they were better. And the third category was things that we'd already covered or gone the other way. So I wanted to go to the technical first. These amendments here, so I think the private committee were likely. And then we can go into those, then we go to the other one.
Keeping in the spirit of the way he handles the sentencing from the beginning, when you ask him to come back to technical amendments, he always tries to sneak in a few of the zingers. So the zingers will mark no, and the committee wants to bring him up.
The letter is all technical amendments.
Yeah. So are we ready?
So when we say amendments too, we're going off.
We're coming off the sheet of amendments now.
Which you're taking from.
Okay, all the amendments aren't taken, well, most of them, but there are a couple of changes in his recommendations and all sorts of things. Okay, the classification of offense, amendment number 2. When we were discussing this with the Attorney General and the Sister of these times, we started getting concerned about the following problem. A person had either been convicted of a prior felony in Alaska and it was not a classified felony at the time, or a person is convicted of a crime in another state that is a felony in another state, but they do not have classification, so they're anywhere similar to ours. So we start getting concerned about the fact of what, now that we're going to have aggravating and mitigating circumstances that depend upon whether the prior felony was a more serious offense or a less serious offense, what does that lead to litigation and to opening up the record of the prior judgment? Of what, find out whether that was a classification offense that was similar to the Class A, Class B, or Class C felonies. In order to alleviate that problem, Mr. Hickey and the Attorney General suggested that, which everyone else thought was a good idea, that we define what a Class A, Class B, Class C felony, and as long as we're doing that, we define what Class A, Class B misdemeanors were in violation. And then subsections B and C of the amendment were already signed off by the committee under designation of the section in different sections, and they're merging together into one section and proposed that as an amendment to Title 11 and not Title 12.
I heard everything except about the last sentence.
Well, subsections B and C of this proposed amendment were in. It had already been signed off by the committee in the previous draft in a different section. Basically, it says a felony not defined is a felony and a misdemeanor not defined is a true misdemeanor. So I merged that into this amendment to stick it into Title 11.
I think you might not have done what you think you
do. Actually,
that's what it is. That is, you could read a felony defined outside this title. So forth, to mean, one wise judge, one opportunity, could read that to mean a felony defined in any other law, which is not what he meant, but clearly when you were coming out with your generalized breakdown, because I'm sure what meant there is that you should say that change alone so that there be some guidelines for determining prior offenses before the effective date of the act or another jurisdiction.
Well, that's.
Yeah. What's interesting, I think what that's tended to do, you know, for our report, that you have something outside Title 11.
That's right. I understand the intention. I'm saying that it can be interpreted more broadly than you
as
referring to
felonies of other jurisdictions.
Felonies of other jurisdictions. Oh. Find outside the title that they need to find new laws that are not available. And I know that's not what
you're right.
But perhaps, I know it's not, perhaps though, that if it is defined in the law of Washington, and there is no penalty provided by the law of Washington, it should be treated as a speed felony.
Let us say just to have a different way of describing conduct, that is in fact a major felony in Alaska, we want them to be treated as a major felony.
But we, that's not a problem anymore.
Look at this.
Anything is a fire.
What's this saying, Judge Grinch? Let's say
the
first condition is a felony in the state of Washington, which means it has to have more than 1 year. And it does not have its penalty specifically attached to it. And how do we decide in Alaska what kind of a case it is? This says, well, in that case, it would be a few felonies. What the penalty was, but since it is a felony, you know, if you have a very new to it. So, well, I got the idea that the reason for the first page here was to in part address the classification of the purpose of the determination of the nature of fire when you're addressing the mitigation or aggravation.
Well, this part here, B and C had already been signed off by the committee in the probably different section called designation of offense. Okay. It didn't have anything to do with well, whether it's your
mistake or our mistake.
Yeah. So, I mean, they can be created.
I don't see it as a problem at all. But,
I would not want this to be called, well, it almost certainly be a class A felony by the law of Alaska to a C felony. And then have a guy who was convicted of a D felony going in and arguing somehow that's a factor in mitigation.
No,
but in fact, it should be a factor in aggravation.
And that's the purpose of the original thing that does point out.
That's right, but this subsection A, if misinterpreted that way, by a preacher, no. He's right.
It couldn't be.
I'm listening very carefully. It's a felony defined outside the title, period.
Well, how about a felony under the last law defined outside
the title? That's fine. So what about someone in the state of Washington?
Washington will take care of
it. Well, no, then you go to page one and decide whether it fits into the definition of a class A, class B, class C,
like the
local
Washington. Yeah. Outside of title, when you left the statute.
Felony defined under the Alaska law, but outside the title, something like that, whatever proper grammar.
Wait, let's figure it out right now. We're going to give it some printer.
Yeah, let's see how we do it.
Felony. I would say a felony under Alaska law is defined outside this title.
I think that's right. By the way, I don't know what legislative affairs will do if I let you get away with it, but I sure think that phrase is so long that you need a comma after the word provided.
Why are we at?
Line 6, just not one line down. Just asking, you know, if they won't let you do it, not our style, well, we'll go. It sure be a lot easier to read your comments.
Okay, well,
no, that's incorrect.
Is that incorrect?
Get that link.
Well, he was a little bit older behind me in years. His older brother could spell a lot better.
Have we moved the amendment?
No. local amendment. The amendment number 2 has been amended. Is there any questions? Any objections?
Okay, now amendment number 3 is probably the amendment that's going to create the most discussion by this committee. This was suggested by the Department of Law. I believe, if you may remember, we had a discussion about whether the constitutional provision in Alaska creates a problem for the Declaration of Purpose. Department of Law suggested it would be taken out. I can't give you
my own feeling on it is that the way you set up is on the sentencing. No specific provisions you'll see later on in the amendment, but you can't suspend bias. I mean, you can't have bias for first.
Mm-hmm.
I think that not taking it out, just asking for it. I think that the amendment is very important. Yeah, I agree.
No, the Attorney General suggested the amendment.
Right. What I'm saying is I agree with the Attorney General.
We're assuming it's moving it to just one of the lists.
That
way you're not saying that a certain factor is contrary to what's in the Constitution. It's given primary weight over the other factors.
But
the
only thing, of course, the
Constitution is
the important thing, of course, is that what we say, though, is that you must, for second offenders, you must be sentenced to presumptive term. So
we're arguing, of course, that that has to be in there somewhere to be awarded in court.
We're saying that I'm saying that,
I think
you, Attorney General, if you do it the way it was originally drafted, you're just asking for it.
Yeah, the stuff that the dangerous language constitutionally is the word give primary weight to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm looking for the Constitution.
Well, the purpose of the administration shall be.
That's where the question is. I'm not very raised the issue about confirmation.
It was also raised in citizens. I raised the question of the blue teacher and the green inspector and the local report in the question. And other people brought it up all along. Got a constitutional position.
The purpose of the penal administration shall be the reformation of defense.
I did a memo on this for Senator Sackett on a completely unrelated subject to this.
I'm going to work for every legislator there is.
And there were several comments made on the floor of the convention at the time when they moved this section. One by Ralph River, and they refer to more than just penal administration. They also refer to sort of inference and sentencing practice.
Article 1, Section 12.
So that's to me, it was strictly dedicated to penal administration. There'd be a pretty strong argument that a sentencing bill would not be unconstitutional. But by the language of the delegates on the floor of the convention, I think it might be a question of constitutionality. But then the Attorney General seems to feel more strongly than I do that it might be in the Constitution as we've written now, and therefore they didn't move it
forward. Now, the one way of looking at it, I just think drafting this way doesn't change the surface laws that much from our point of view. And if anything, it does strengthen the Constitution. That's the point of the state.
Mr. Chairman, may I inquire if the staff and the Senate or if this committee is considered actually I was just wondering about the possibility of putting constitutional language somewhere in the Declaration of
No, I don't see
that question must have already been raised before someone.
I agree completely with the Attorney General. Yes. You've set up a sentencing structure that does certain things, and there is no need to put in the introductory section, the declaration of purpose, that the primary purpose of it is this, you know, and say this is the primary purpose, when that may in fact be in conflict with the constitutional provision. There's no need.
What's that going to be like?
In terms of penal, in terms of putting in specific, why would that even, I guess, requesting them, why do you have to repeat the constitutional provision of the statute?
Well, it's an old Emanuel Seller check from the House Judiciary Committee in Congress that he did for about 25 years. Whenever he wanted to make sure something was either constitutional or unconstitutional, did it work? Yes, it did. And one particular thing, he's pleased very long to make sure that in fact the bill passed was unconstitutional. That in place of policy.
The other argument would be that there is perhaps an argument that penal administration does not mean sentencing.
But that's what I said, you know, on the floor of the convention, they talked about sentencing and penitentiary and all that in the same sentence, in the same language. So, I don't know.
Okay, so far, I don't like the subject
Okay, well, I'll just move the amendment. Amendment number 3 is removed. Any objections?
Okay, amendment number 4 is suggested by the Attorney General, page 5, line 11. Just to make it clear that the court has the authority to specify a period of time or to specify installments for which a fine may be made. It's common practice in the courts these days. Hardly anybody has the kind of large fine, has the money to.
You don't think that's implied?
Well, I thought it was implied, but law thought they wanted it in because to make it clear. You'll see that recommendation on.
Put somebody in jail in court. No, there's a prior section there. D is the thing, starting on page 4. If you recall from payment of a fine, the number of things that shall cause why you should not be kept in prison for non-payment. But I would presume that in fact, if the record of payment is in the sentence, there were no jail sentence. I don't think you could put them in jail for non-payment unless it was just a short period of jail for.
I think it isn't clear anywhere in the fine section that the court does have the power to grant the installments. I think it's implicit.
Yeah, I move the amendment.
I think it's implicit to grant. It doesn't make it clear.
Okay, is there any objection to amendment number 4? No objection to amendment number 4 is adopted.
Okay, amendment number 5, page 8, line 16. Now, this committee is not at today specifically addressed the problem of should people who are sentenced to a presumed term be eligible for parole before that presumed term has been satisfied. This amendment would make it, among other things, this amendment makes it clear that if you're sentenced to a presumed term, your sentence cannot be suspended, you can't have an imposition granted, or imposition sentence shall not be.
I think your language is better.
This is an important section. This is what Barry was referring to earlier.
Section 180. This is a thing that we thought, I mean, that everybody thought was applied in the bill, which I wasn't frankly sure that it was.
Well, they say, except for the extent under 180 or 200.
What is the three-judge panel?
Factors in aggravation mitigation three-judge
panel. Well, yeah.
No, just three-judge.
No, that's factors in aggravation mitigation in three-judge panel. Yeah.
But what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then... I don't even find that language in his letter. I think that was prepared at our request.
Doug, this isn't a Hickey's letter.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, this is Hickey's letter, but his...
But it was also at our request because it came up and we were listening to his testimony.
No, this is Hickey's letter, but Hickey's letter cites sections that aren't even in the statute.
What's
page 7, very bottom. Look where you see amendment number 5.
Yeah. Oh, all
right. His suggestion here cites sections that aren't even in the statute. He also, on subsection 1 on page 8, where he says, parole except under AS 3315-180 B and C may not be granted. There is no section B and C in subsection 180, and 180 grants parole after the right to parole after 180 days has been served.
Let me ask a question about the subsection C. I guess that means that unless we have specifically limited to this sentence in terms of discretion, he still has it in the other area.
Yeah. Yeah. Hickey's suggestion would have said, I mean, it's kind of a stupid in a way, because it says parole shall may not be granted except under AS 3315-180. Well, AS 3315-180 gives the power to grant parole after he served 180 days. So that's basically what his proposed amendment would have done, would have said you can't grant parole until the guy served 6 months.
I mean,
you granted that.
Yeah, I took it out.
Let me go back and just make sure I know what I've already checked sections 180 to 200. Okay. Okay. You know, we really haven't voted on a number in section 140. Which don't.
No, we have
presumptive terms. So I suppose after we look at these amendments, we can go back and look at those.
Yeah, the numbers have to be decided. Well, you want to look at that in the statute?
No, I don't want to do that. But it looks all right. I just wanted to check it.
I'll take your word for it.
Mr. Chairman, I would move amendment number 5 to change the on line 9, the typo be corrected and granted to change the suspended.
Okay. Yeah, let me see, Mr. Chairman.
You can bring it up. So, Rod, do you want to still go to the center?
Well,
it's not going to go. It's not going to go.
Well, we should
want
to
start it. Well, let's go through that.
Okay, we have number 5 as amended before. Is there any objection? There's no objection, Mr. Rock.
Okay, amendment 6 is page 10, line 23. Our suggested aggravating circumstances. Now, they are the same as the ones recommended by law on page 9, except paragraph 13, I added the offense was known and directed at an officer of the court, comma. I added an officer of the court. concerned about the process server. I think that's one guy that, you know, that, yeah, well, it's just,
they're already in the proposed amendment.
An active reformer judicial officer. No, those are all the ones you recommended. I just added to it.
So just in terms of record, on subsection 11 there, the pecuniary incentive was beyond that appearance and the expense itself. Mm-hmm. So the reason he did it was for money.
Yeah, basically, that's the contract.
Yeah, okay.
That's the higher stuff.
Yeah.
You know, or the guy who breaks some when he's trying to collect money for, loan shark.
Number 12 is too broad. It'll be solely motor.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Solely motor. Otherwise, you could say that applies to anybody.
I don't care, it's not my
answer. I apologize for the issue.
The pen's okay. Does anybody have any other beliefs?
I have a problem with the letter.
I think, Mr. Chairman, the one case I've seen where it's sort of irrelevant, I haven't seen any other case, but there's one on the Kenai Peninsula this year where a guy was passing to Homer Electric.
Yeah.
He raised the defense in trial that he'd done it solely because his family needed to, you know, had to have the power and he couldn't afford it or something. I mean, of course, it's not a valid defense. But, I mean, these circumstances would have, if there'd been a second offense, a second felony, he was convicted of grand larceny. A big felony, then with this provision never been made.
Range of offenders as a guy whose sole motivation is to be a professional criminal. Chairman, at this hearing, the defense could have put on this argument with regard to that. At the same time, the state would be coming under 9 of what we've already approved, offering factors in aggravation, saying, yes, but the offense knowingly involved more than one victim. And the person knew that he was harming somebody far beyond the harms of his own family, perhaps. And that is also before the judge. And he might still end up saying, well, normally I could aggravate 2 years, but mitigate a couple of years, but I believe the state, therefore I'm going to aggravate by 3. The factors in mitigation and aggravation are going to be on before the judge at the same time.
I grant you.
Okay, well, we've already made joyriding a felony. If both guy has a prior seatbelt. Now, we've also made several other things that are not, we've promoted several crimes. Okay, suppose you've got your second joyriding, or something where they might say, approve the intention to drive, but in either case, it's felony. And the reason you grabbed the car this time was to run to the hospital and begin the meeting again.
I have a problem with the word. I have a problem with the language of overwhelming compulsion. Why not people say this? The defendant was motivated solely by a desire. I mean, what are we trying to say by overwhelming compulsion? I can understand it the way it was originally drafted. You know, it just doesn't. I think if you say the defendant was motivated solely by desire to provide for emergency.
Well, I think what that overwhelming compulsion means there, Barry, is that it hasn't risen to the level of a defense where the guy's intent is actually. Different because of his mental state of mind, but it is a compulsion higher than a desire.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody could have a desire, right? But
I think
overwhelming compulsion. I think you want to leave it in there, or you're grounding it way
No, I see. Okay.
Chairman, I accept I accept the proposed amendments to my motion, so that we now be motivated solely by an overwhelming compulsion to provide emergency necessity for the needy family, and I'll also ask that Mr. Pope and Mr. Stern, perhaps change the grammar a little bit on emergency necessity.
Any objections? No objections. Any more amendments to this report?
Mr. Chairman? Mr. Chairman, if that's true, then there wasn't the intent that was included as the element of the offense that was proved to the fact trier.
Wait a minute.
We're talking about 14.
Yeah. What's the argument on the other side?
Thank you.
I just wondered
if there's one thing I'm concerned about. I wasn't coming from your angle. What I sort of did was saying that if you are an informer, and even though you may be a third felon, there's going to be a mitigating factor that you're an informer. See, I didn't view it like you did there.
Yeah.
I didn't view it as a tool to use. But think of what you're saying. You're saying that we consider you a better person in for sentencing purposes because you snitched on your friend. And even though it has no relationship to the offense you're being sentenced for.
Well, you know, they got laws about snitching on your friends in regard to accomplices and a whole bunch of other stuff. You know, there's way too much of this kind of...
Yes, but it's applicable to that offense. It's applicable to the offense that, you know, you're being prosecuted for. This says that if you have a history of being an undercover agent, say, best example, in drug offense, if you are later arrested for a murder, has nothing to do with drug offense. It's a mitigating factor.
Well,
you should make it, what it says is the status of the informer is a mitigating factor, even though it's not related to the offense. That's what bothered me, Joe.
Yeah. I didn't think of that.
This is tied down.
He's an informer 10 years before, right.
Yeah. Now, you could say, by other person, you could, of course, limit it to the specific offense.
Contemporaneously with the...
other person with him, you know, as an accomplice or as part of the crime. Your comment there wouldn't be covered by this. You uncover offenses committed by other persons or attempt to apprehend other persons. If I was a prosecutor, I'd argue that because you said where the property was, that wasn't covered by this.
Okay, maybe
I
shouldn't have
that
actually
go
on the other hand. But this does lead you to chance there. I think that you
I'll
Mitigating circumstances is exempt except in the case of sexual assault.
Because this gets right back to the fact that the subcommission and others drafting never thought of provocation, meaning other than provocation by violence or just violence.
So this would be amendment to the
simple assault with a friendly cell.
So in other words,
I was concerned, you know, the sensitivity has rewritten sexual assault.
We haven't voted on it.
Well, that's why I'm concerned about voting on this amendment, because I think perhaps in a situation where you have a B felony as a sexual touching, that maybe you want to have some kind of a...
Why don't we hold this?
Okay.
Well, I think the amendment that I'm offering makes it clear that it doesn't affect the sexual touching.
Yeah. Well, we'll hold this one.
Are those the last two?
Mr. Chairman,
then really what we have to do is review Section 140 and make sure that we agree with those. We never voted on those numbers. They may well be uncontroversial.
Well, also, Mr. Chairman, there are aspects of this letter that perhaps the bank clerk or someone else might want to bring out that we decided not to include it. I'm more than willing to discuss why I thought they were. Because I didn't think they were all policy changes. I thought some of them might have been worse.
Mr. Chairman, we got the letter. I think any one of us might grab amendments and put it in later time. We haven't voted on what's before us, which is the number to discuss more for you.
Right, so whatever you want to formula, you can go to a straight discount,
And we don't, right at this point, we don't have a good time section of this bill. I think you probably should.
Well, I'm explaining, Fred, that the, as I said, first thing, these numbers are basically what